my co-founder was like, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this. And I found myself sitting at the computer and staring at it for hours, or like doing games on my phone. And I was horrified. I was like, what is going on? I am supposedly an entrepreneur. I supposedly know how to run a business. All of these things are things that I, am I just like cosplaying this or something? Like, I was totally undone with myself, but couldn't change it. And it kind of spiraled a little bit into a bit of a depression, which I had also had in my first couple of years in college. And so I started like connecting the dots of like, why was I super depressed in college? Oh, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't go to class. I didn't kind of engage. Oh my gosh, there's actually kind of a parallel here. And I started researching it. And it turns out I have an attentive mode of ADHD, which is super common in women. And it's weird because I thought of myself as a very high achieving, but I was always reactive. Like if something comes in, I get it done. If something comes in, I get it done. And that so fits an ADHD personality.
Hello, my name is Emily Jansen, and this is the Leadership is Female podcast. We interview women in the sports and entertainment businesses to teach you the tips and the mindset that will get you to the top faster. Marian Wright Edelman said, "You can't be what you can't see." Let's bring visibility to women who are crushing it in their roles. Join us week after week, season after season, as we reach back to extend a hand to pull you forward. We will lead you forward because leadership is female. Welcome to the Leadership is Female podcast, Claire Milligan. We are pumped to have you here today. We were already chatting before we hit record, and I know this is going to be a great episode. I want to throw it to you to introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Thanks, Emily. I'm Claire. Claire Milligan. I am the CEO and co-founder of Aimably. And what we do is we help technology-based businesses understand and control their cloud services spending. And when I say cloud services, I mean folks like Amazon Web Services, Microsoft Azure, and Google Cloud Platform.
That is a lot. And it is a complex problem, right, that a lot of people deal with. So how did you find your way into specializing in this area of business?
It's a winding route. I am not a person that came to school and was like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a lawyer. Nah. My passion is learning something new. And that has taken me a lot of different directions. And in my previous job, I was hired as the lead product designer about 10 years ago. And by the time I left to form Aimably with a longtime colleague of mine, I had become the general manager of that line of business. And essentially what happened was, is I was frustrated with a thing or found something to be missing. And so I said, let me learn, let me grow. And luckily I had people that were really open to that in that experience. Specifically for this business, we were bought by a private equity firm. And in doing that, we were then rolled into a larger company where we had a bunch of different acquisitions that all fed into a product ecosystem to be sold. And my job essentially as the general manager of that original business is that I was going to take a growth business and actually turn it into a cash cow to be able to fund the operations for others. And in doing so, I had to question absolutely every line of spend. And so I started being a master of that, except as I found out, I could not understand why we were spending anything on the cloud and how we could change it. So knowing that it must be a problem everyone else was facing, my colleague and I decided to start a business.
Okay. This is such a great story, and one where I talk a lot about curiosity. Mm. But the way that curiosity played into your growth of your career and then ultimately starting a new business is really interesting, especially when you weren't necessarily an expert in this line of work.
No, I actually became an expert in making a company a cash cow by reading Accounting for Dummies. It's actually a great book.
I love that. Well, I mean, where are you going to start, right? Like sometimes if you don't know anything, you start at line one, and what a better way to do so than a book that will take you from A to Z.
Yeah, there you go.
That is so perfect. So how do you employ your curiosity today? So now that you've sort of cracked that code, started that company, you've grown to be very successful. How do you employ the curiosity and then make sure that you know, it's a key factor in your personality. So how do you keep it engaged?
Oh, let me start there because I can get really stuck on being frustrated with doing the same thing. And so it's really important for it to constantly evolve and change. And also, as a founder and a leader, it's important to not force change on other people because stability and in employment is very important, right? So it's a challenge to balance those things. What I found has been very interesting for us is that we started with this idea that we were going to be a software solution. And we've evolved towards being software-enabled services. And that has really allowed our curiosity to flourish and to be able to really engage with our customers a lot deeper than what we thought we were going to be doing. In particular, the challenge of cloud services is one of technology and finance not understanding each other. And actually creating problems interpersonally. It's a very interpersonal problem because of a lack of understanding and also somewhat turf wars driven by that lack of understanding. So for us, when we come into our clients, it's a lot about learning the personalities and the individuals and what have they done before and what can we do after. Ultimately, what we deliver is something that's very analytical it's structured to be able to have an offering to help people understand what is they're spending on and how they can control it. But in order to deliver it correctly for each client, it's a little bit of an interesting nut to crack. So, for me, that's what really keeps the curiosity active.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Individual or problem solving for each individual company that you're working. And you know, I hear a lot of satisfaction for your work in your voice. How do professionals reclaim their own professional joy?
I think everyone's different. I can tell you that for me, joy comes from lack of restrictions that are don't seem to have a purpose. Sometimes when you work for other people, the challenge is navigating what they need out of your work and what the company needs out of your work. And sometimes those two things are different. And when they're very different, I kind of find myself being rather oppositional and challenging it quite a lot. And I don't think I can ever change who I am. That's just a core to who I am. And so one of the finding joy for me in work has been to really focus myself down on how do I deliver for clients and for employees a great experience? And for me, that's working for myself and also having a business partner who I trust. We talk about it being married, even though we're not. So those things are important to me.
So what happens when, for an individual, their dream job isn't ha as they imagined it would be?
I've had that for sure. So I was on the track from design through to product management, and that was my focus in the tech world. And I was promoted to the chief product officer role for that business that I had been in. And that's what I had been pushing for. Everything I had looked at, everything I had researched, everything I had learned, the teams I had built, I was really proud of that accomplishment. And I felt like once I got there, that I was very restricted. There was inertia all over the business. There were all kinds of ways that I needed to make sure that I satisfied the individual goals and dreams of all the other executives I was with. And I found that as opposed to being this kind of like creative outlook and forward-thinking vision role, it was actually more like project manager for other people's plans. And so that was a really big disappointment. But the most important thing that I took from that was figure that out and move on. Because I found another area of the business where I could really contribute value, be more independent, create a vision for what should be for the next step, and just say, I will help you guys find my replacement, but I need to go over here.
Yeah, figure it out and move on. I think a lot of times we're overcommitted to the position, and rather than thinking about how we can best contribute. And if it's not a good fit, you know, you got to find something else, because you owe it to not only yourself, but also to the company, right?
Yeah. A lot of times we think about, especially as women, we think about this need to make good on our commitments. And sometimes making good on your commitment is also saying, I'm not the person to do this commitment, right?
I love how you put that. And I feel like you could take out a pen and paper and just write that down as a permission slip for yourself.
Yeah.
That you're not, you didn't ink that one in blood, right? Like, you can change your mind, change your direction to find what's best for you. And, you know, I think we do struggle sometimes with decision-making, and you've been able to build many decision-making frameworks that empower and excel a business. But I think there's also application for the individual. So can you talk a little bit about creating one of those decision-making frameworks and how that might benefit us, or lead us to be maybe less indecisive and more in control?
Oh, that's very interesting. I think actually one of my fatal flaws is that I make decisions too quickly. So I'm not sure if I actually have a really great framework, to be honest with you. But what I do is I slow down because I make those decisions so quickly. My wife and I all often talk about, like, whether or not a conversation or a decision is one that's emotionally driven or factually driven. Sometimes it's hard to see. A lot of times it's slowing down and saying, let me give this time to percolate. Is this just a knee-jerk response, or is this something broader? A great example is that, as we were planning to have kids, and it's a little bit more complicated when you have two women, you kind of have to do a lot more planning. But we were looking, and I was having a lot of trouble at work, and I was just getting so easily frustrated, and I just wanted to leave. And my wife was like, look, this is not the time. No, you're going to figure this out, and you're going to make it work. And so part of that decision-making framework was, how important is it to say, yes, you're absolutely right, we need to do what you're encouraging me to do, and to sit and pause and think through that. So for me, the biggest point is give it a little bit of time and a little bit of space and analyze what's emotional and what's analytical. I really have always valued myself as an analytical person, but I've come to realize over the years that it's not entirely that, and I'm actually quite emotional. And so to embrace that and say, that's okay, let's just understand that that's happening.
Because, okay, you are the person to give advice on this topic, because that was really insightful. And I think oftentimes that maybe in the workplace, we don't consider that the decision could be emotionally driven. Mm-hmm. And if you do slow down and you really take the time to think about it, you can really discover, like, where that emotion or where that is coming from. So I think
and sometimes that, emotion is telling you the right thing. I mean, like, that it's not to say emotion is very valuable.
It is. And I think, you know, women are really good at that. Like, that's one of our superpowers, is kind of tapping into that emotional side and seeing the situation in more of a 3D construct, and understanding, like, the players, who's involved, and really giving it a larger consideration. So I wouldn't say to shy away from that. Maybe your gut instinct is quick and it could be correct.
Yeah.
But, you know, halting for a second to really survey the landscape is very, very good. And leads me to my next question. And this is a topic that has been coming up a lot, in my world, whether it's on Instagram or in my inbox, but it's the topic of ADHD.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about that.
Are you one of the people that's been self-diagnosed by Instagram?
I feel like Instagram said that I have ADHD. So now I get all the information, and then look at this. I'm interviewing you today, and it's one of the things that you can speak to. So I we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I did not have any idea that I might have ADHD, until we had the first summer of starting this business, and all of our communications with the outside world went dry. We've discovered there's a seasonality to budgets, you know, I discovered that's so silly, because there is a seasonality to budgets, right? So you plan in the fall, and then you start executing in the winter and the spring, and in the summer, nobody cares. No, people are just spending what they're spending, right? So there was a seasonality to our business. And when it went quiet, we went, what are we doing? And my co-founder was like, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this. And I found myself sitting at the computer and staring at it for hours, or like doing games on my phone. And I was horrified. I was like, what is going on? I am supposedly an entrepreneur. I supposedly know how to run a business. All of these things are things that I, am I just like cosplaying this or something? Like, I was totally undone with myself, but couldn't change it. And it kind of spiraled in a little bit into a bit of a depression, which I had also had in my first couple of years in college. And so I started like connecting the dots of like, why was I super depressed in college? Oh, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't go to class. I didn't kind of engage. Oh my gosh, there's actually kind of a parallel here. And I started researching it. And it turns out I have inattentive mode of ADHD, which is super common in women. And it's weird because I thought of myself as a very high achieving, but I was always reactive. Like if something comes in, I get it done. If something comes in, I get it done. And that so fits an ADHD personality. Like customer success and customer support leaders are great at this if they have ADHD, because it's all about handling each situation well. And one of the cool facets about it is that you have this capability to kind of respond to something that would be very overwhelming to somebody else. But to you, it's like a moment of clarity. That being said, when there's nothing to do, you have to like create all of this scaffolding to try to like work around it and get better. Medication helps, all of this helps. But yeah, understanding that what ADHD in women looks like, it was something that opened my mind to giving myself permission to not hate myself for things that were just kind of natural to me.
What did that look like to discover that diagnosis? Where did you start? I think often when there's something, you know, we have an inkling that we need to look further into what's going on with ourselves, but it's very confusing where to start. It seemingly, it shouldn't be, given we have so much information at access to our fingertips, but maybe that makes it worse in some
situations. Yeah. Well, because also like, I mean, I got diagnosed by TikTok. That's what I say. I deleted TikTok later because it was a real bad source of distraction. But yeah, no, and it was people telling stories of being like, da, da, da. Oh yeah. And that's because of my ADHD. And at first I was having this conversation with my dad, and he was like, isn't that what everybody feels? And so it was this weird, like, am I just reading stuff on the internet? Like very odd. But essentially to test it, I started taking a bunch of diagnostics. It was very clear. And then I went through a formal diagnosis process, which is actually somewhat laborious. And so when somebody says I've been diagnosed, like they really have. And it just became extraordinarily clear. And then also the last bit that really let me get a sense that I should probably be paying attention to this was that my daughter started having a lot of trouble sitting still. And there was a lot of ways where she just loved books, but just stopped halfway through, for instance. And I was like, oh, these things are hereditary, aren't they?
So what do you do now to manage it as CEO of this company? Like, how do you manage that on day to day and still, you know, achieve at your highest levels, but not at your detriment, right? Because that's partly together.
I try to allow myself. Well, so one of the features of ADHD is that you actually have these moments of hyper-focus. So you can really go super deep and be incredibly effective in a short period of time. And it's this like superhero mode. And I try to leverage those as best I can, because ultimately, you know, as an entrepreneur, the more you can give, the more you get. It's kind of unfortunately to your detriment. So I try to leverage the moments of hyper-focus as much as I can. And I try to give myself a lot of structure to my day. I actually meet with my co-founder twice a day, and we have a lot of structure to how we engage with our clients. There's a very repetitive process in how we do that. I try to like set goals for the week and all that. I also, frankly, I use medication, because if I did not, I would have a lot of trouble overcoming this on my own. But then secondarily with my daughter as well, like we work out a schedule with her, and I try to teach her the like methodology of giving structure to your day, because you're going to need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I want to ask you, what's the biggest hurdle that you've had to overcome? We talked about ADHD, but you become CEO of this very successful company. There had to have been a couple of stumbling blocks along the way. Can you talk about
Yeah.
one of those and how you overcame it and how you're better off today?
My biggest hurdle was really that moment when I realized that I was not performing as an entrepreneur, and because I could not motivate myself. But one of the really key ways that that helped me get out of that also was that I connected on this group called Chief, which is a bunch of women executives all over the country who are looking for a private network and to support each other and to bring up both business and personal opportunities together. Through that, I got in touch with a couple of other women and some outside of Chief, and we created a female founders group and we meet monthly. And it has been an incredible lifeline, even in times when we're super like everything's going great. But at the moments of it being absolute worst, I just was laying it out there for everyone else. And each person in the group, there's about six of us, each person had a different perspective and an option for a way to think of things that I was not getting anywhere else in my life. And so, the power of a group of women, incredible.
How did you form that group? Like, what's your sort of best practices for bringing that group together and then staying in touch? Because I think often we get it going, we're meeting regularly, especially during the pandemic. That was like the launch of these perfect small groups. And then as life gets sort of back to normal and really busy, it can easily fall apart. So, what is your advice for keeping those ties strong?
I think it can depend on each person and what works, but what I found, I actually tried a couple of these, and then until the one that I'm in, the most critical is that you've got to be united around some focus. So it might be your industry, it might be the specific stage of business you're in, or a role that you have, but something where everyone could be able to comment on their own experience and then learn from the other people's experience. That has to be critical. One of the groups I started in, everyone was senior VP level, but across a lot of different industries. And so I couldn't really relate to the challenge that was going through a HR leader's mind, right? For instance. So that unifying factor is super important. The commitment is super important. You have to be really structured about it. And then in the individual meetings, you have to have a purpose and a structure to it. Sometimes people will use an external facilitator, and I think that does work well sometimes. In our case, we structure it so everyone kind of presents a key issue or kind of talks through what's going on if they can't identify a key issue.
If you are listening to this podcast, I know you are a busy professional. We can agree we are always looking for products that are convenient and make life easier. Mobot water bottles are one of these products. It's a water bottle and a foam roller in one. I use the water bottle at the gym, staying hydrated in boot camp, and then flipping the bottle on its side at the end of class to quickly foam roll my legs. It helps with recovery and gets me back to work faster. Get yours at mobot.com and use the code LEADERSHIPISFEMALE, all one word, to get 15% off. Support Lonnie Cooper, the female founder of this product, and support yourself. This is a must-have wellness water bottle. I don't know about you, but I love learning more about myself. If there's a quiz out there to help me better understand who I am, I'll take it. If there's a journal prompt, I'm using it. But how about a business that helps female leaders communicate effectively while inspiring confidence and trust in those you want to impact? Sign me up. Breakthrough Brands is unlocking clarity for women leading progress. They build leadership brands for women to discover what inspires them, define what drives them, and unlock how to share their brands with others. Do you want to gain clarity on your personal brand? Shoot me a note at leadershipisfemale@gmail.com or on Instagram, and we will introduce you to the women who will help you unlock your leadership brand. That's breakthroughbrands.com. At Leadership is Female, we are serious about supporting you in your career. That includes the tips to get you ahead inside your current organization or provide you with the next big opportunity in a new role. That's why we have partnered with Legacy Search, an executive recruiting firm specializing in mid to senior level executive searches across professional, collegiate, and minor league sports. Check out the openings listed at legacysportssearch.com or in our monthly Leadership is Female newsletter. Hint, if you have not signed up for the newsletter, head to leadershipisfemale.com. If you find a job listed at Legacy Sports Search that looks like it should be yours, email us at leadershipisfemale@gmail.com and we will introduce you directly to the opportunity. This is your career. Make the most of it. Do you need a keynote speaker for your next conference, ERG meeting, event, or group? I'm here, raising my hand. I help leaders grow their confidence so that they can lead more intentional, goal-directed, fulfilled, and happy lives. We are conditioned from our childhood to stay small. Don't be conceited. Run in the middle of the pack, because if we speak out too much or shine too brightly, we will offend other people. This could not be more wrong. When you are your best, most confident leader, you give others permission to shine too. So, how do we get there? How do we increase our confidence? I love sharing my best practices and proven methods to help leaders grow into who they are meant to be, your most confident, authentic self, ready to take on your next biggest challenge in the office and in your personal life. Get in touch at emilyjansen.com.
And we'll spend a lot of time asking questions back. And then at the end, we'll kind of like give a little bit of a thought and then move on to the next person. So as long as you've got a structure and everyone's committed to that structure and is benefiting from that structure, then I think it works. But you have to be willing to kind of iterate.
Yeah. That's a really, really good framework. Again, for those circles of women, and a lot to think about on if you're cultivating that group correctly to serve, you know, the body perfectly, and then also staying committed. I want to ask you as well, like you're running a business, mm-hmm. you're a CEO, and that takes a lot of confidence. So how much has self-confidence played into your success? And are there ever moments where you feel like it wavers, and how do you recover?
Oh, 100%. So my undergrad degree is actually in psychology, and I had this light bulb moment in a psychology class, which actually kind of got me out of my depression in college. And it was the definition of self-efficacy is different than the definition of self-esteem. So self-esteem, they're talking about like, how do you feel about yourself and whether or not you like yourself? And self-efficacy is, do you believe you're capable of doing something? For me, I've never lacked in self-efficacy. For some reason, I just think I'm so great in terms of what I could possibly accomplish. Whether or not I like myself, that's always been up for grabs, right? So I realized then that one of the reasons why I have had low self-esteem from time to time is because my actual behavior hasn't matched with my belief of self-efficacy. And that gap has always been a challenge. Now I try to look back. I try to say, like, look at what I've accomplished. Look at what I've done. You actually have, even if on the day-to-day you have a challenge, but on the horizon, the longer-term perspective, you actually do. But as long as I just separate those two and know that I need to speak to myself more favorably in the self-esteem realm, I think that's kind of how I get through it.
I love that advice. That is so spot on and something that we all need to consider. And, you know, most importantly, are your behaviors supporting your trajectory? Are you behaving in a way that you think you are capable of achieving those goals that you've set out for yourself?
Yeah. One foot in front of the other, right?
Exactly. And also, you know, that peek in the rearview mirror, like reflection on how far you've come and everything you've overcome can bolster your confidence to move forward with more self-assurance.
Yeah.
So speaking of that, leading through the storm, how do you cultivate empathy and transparency in times of turbulence? At any point in time, you know, business is going to go through some rocky roads or some rocky people or some rocky deals. Yeah. How do you navigate those circumstances?
For me, the biggest challenge in those circumstances has been navigating between transparency and keeping information close to the vest. I think that a lot of times as businesses go through turbulence, leaders want to make sure that nobody else feels the turbulence, that for some reason only we do, and we are going to figure it out, and then we won't let anybody know, and then we'll let people know. And everybody can tell when the leaders are uncomfortable, right? You know, we act differently, we carry ourselves differently. And the worst thing you can do is to let people know through those ways that something's wrong and then pretend like it's not. So I would say that in times of turbulence, the most important thing is to lead into transparency, and transparency plus education, right? Because as a leader, let's say you're going through financial troubles, you need to be really specific about what those financial troubles are. Is it cash? Is it expense? Is it like investment dollars? What are the exact natures? Is it delayed customers paying their invoices? What are the actual structural components that are leading to this greater problem? Because once everybody understands that, they can line up and really figure it out as in their own capabilities. The more people know, the more they can act and move forward. We had a pretty intense moment. I mentioned that at my previous company, we were transitioning the line of business I ran from a growth business to a cash cow. And in doing so, we really had to cut a lot of expense. So the first thing we did was that we actually reassigned a lot of labor to other different lines of business that were growing. And we said, okay, I know you've been working on this, but you now are completely shifting focus. You're going over and like working on this. But at some point, we actually did have to let go of a few people. And this was timed with another line of business having a huge over expense in labor as well. And so we had to do a layoff across a number of lines of business. And what I decided to do for my line of business, it was smaller. There were fewer people. And these people I had known for years and years. And so I just kind of laid it out and I said, here's what's facing the business. This is my challenge. This is what the business needs to look like. These are all of our expenses. I am questioning absolutely everything. Let's like look at this. But ultimately what I think this means a reduction in a certain number of people. Do you guys agree? Do you not? And now that we're looking at this and saying, we think it's a number of people who would like to move on, you know, take this opportunity and say, I'd like to move on. And so we had a very open conversation. Everyone knew it was coming. I only had to disappoint one person who would wish to stay. And unfortunately I had to let them go. But at the end of the day, when we did the layoff, everyone had a champagne toast and hugged and said our goodbyes and moved on. And, I don't like laying people off, but I'd much rather do it that way than escorting them out with security.
Yeah. I mean, wow. That is something to consider when you're going through those hard times. Like, what if it could be a little bit better?
Yeah.
And in what ways could a terrible situation be improved? And I think you really laid it out with that honesty, empathy, transparency. You know, those have been really key themes in your leadership. And I'd also say curiosity. You kind of thought, like, what if, you know, what if we did it this way? What if we looked at it together? And ultimately, you know, I bet that every single person that was part of that toast is thinking, you know, reflects back on that moment in their career, like, you know, wow, that was something very instrumental in my career that I was a part of that, you know, will shape the future.
Well, I hope so. I also think that in tying to the curiosity, I also didn't ask permission.
Mm-hmm.
I asked for forgiveness.
Yeah.
And because sometimes you can't do what you know it's right when you kind of hope to be approved.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I found too, I've had some different critical conversations across my career. And oftentimes the leader is working, because you're not sharing, you're working it up in your mind in a different way than maybe your staff is viewing. And to your point, like, sometimes they don't want to stay, or they might be looking to move on in the first place. And you're carrying a burden that might be unnecessary, because maybe the behavior that they're exhibiting is because they're ready to go in the first place. So that's also something to consider. And it's been my experience.
Absolutely. And in our particular case, I think that people really wanted to stay if it maintained the atmosphere. But knowing that the atmosphere was going to change, that's not something you wanted to stay for.
Man, so true. That is great leadership advice. So I want to ask you, when you're not working, when you're not leading this company, what are you doing?
I love to be a ski patroller at Alpine Meadows in Lake Tahoe, which is a division of Palisades Tahoe. I've been doing it for nearly 20 years. Started in college, and it fulfills this very deep desire to physically give back, and to be a part of a group of people who operate for the sole purpose of making sure people stay safe and people have fun. I've known this group of people for a very long time, and they're instrumental in my life, and I appreciate the community and the job, and I hope to never have to give it up for many years.
That's amazing. And I, speaking of, from another mom, sometimes I hate this question, but I think we keep asking it for a reason. Like, how do you feed into, all these things that are so important for you while also, feeling like you're taking care of everybody at home, or not feeling that guilt? 'Cause, I'm about to run my second marathon, taking up a lot of time.
That's amazing.
Training, you know, and while it feeds me as a woman and as an individual, you think like, is this the best use of my time? And I think yes, because it makes me a better mom, a better contributor, a better leader when I'm doing things that like make me happy and play into my soul. So how do you feel about that?
You're speaking my language. I hate parenting books, but there's one I adore. This amazing woman named Julie Lithcott-Hames was the dean of freshmen at Stanford when I was there. And she wrote a book called How to Raise an Adult. And it was her response to all of these helicopter parented kids that she was seeing coming through her door. And one of the key tenets she talks about is your kids need to see you fulfilled. If your job is to provide for them, that's their definition of adulthood. And that's almost not only become something they don't want to do, but then they feel like adults are there to serve them, and they then never can envision themselves as adults. So yes, absolutely. I think that you make sure your kids are happy and they have the structure they need. And especially if they need extra help in any way, you address that, and you're supportive and all of those things that take up a lot of our time, but you have to put on your gas mask, or not safe gas mask. You have to put on your oxygen mask first.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to be heading to Amazon to purchase that book because I feel like I need those reminders in this moment in time. And I'm sure other people do as well. And I think it's amazing how, at least in my case, like how much my kids want to be with me or with us. But at the same time, you know, I found myself this weekend being like, can you look back over the course of this weekend and think about how much time I've spent doing everything that you want to do? And have you thought maybe there's something that I might want to do between your sports games, your play dates, the birthday parties we went to, and then playing with you in the yard because we got some great weather this weekend. Like, yes, I do love playing with you. I love being with you and doing all these things. But like, I also need some time to do things that I enjoy.
Absolutely. Also, to tie into that, I mean, I'm going to be a Dean Julie super fan again. She wrote a second book, which is called Your Turn, and it's actually more like a workbook, and it's perfect for folks entering like the tweens and teens, for the kids to really think about like, what kind of adult do I want to be? How do I define myself and not be defined by the attention I get from my parents, you know? Like, what will I do when my mom's practicing for a marathon?
I love it. I'm so happy we talked about it. I mean, whether or not it's like the advice that I just needed to hear from you today, but often I think our listeners are thinking about some of these same things well. So I love that. Thank you for sharing. Well, let's get into the final four questions. What is your best piece of advice for women today so that they can level up?
Okay. I'm very opinionated on this subject. I think that there are tons of stereotypes out there about women. And I think that everybody's ready to catch a woman, a leader, in one of those stereotypes to just confirm their biases. So in my view, my job is to go out and say, which of these stereotypes fit me and which don't? And with conviction, assert that they do or don't. So if I am somebody who's a super committed mom, you're going to know, and you're going to see the photos of my kids, and we're going to talk about them and all of these ways. So you understand that if a year from now, I say, I'm sorry, I need to reschedule this because I have a kids' soccer game, instead of them being like, I knew this woman wasn't going to be capable for the job, instead it's, oh yeah, you know, Claire's really involved in her life, and she also in the kids' life, and she also performs really well, and there you go. So stereotypes only undercut us when we try to avoid them and pretend they don't exist. Lean into them and say, these are mine, these are not, and move on.
I love this advice. And I will say that we have never had this advice before on the podcast.
Really?
No. And I think that, like, we've talked so much about authenticity over the last several years and bringing your authentic self to work. And this is like a different lens in which to like look at and apply that advice. And these are the stereotypes that you're already considering for me. these are true. These are not. And when you're leaning into the truth, then there are truly no surprises.
Absolutely. And actually, if you don't mind, I've got a story of this. I was a mentor to a mentee, an amazing woman based out of Atlanta. She's Black. She's fabulous. She's like an incredible revenue leader. And when I first started meeting with her, she kept being, her biggest challenge was that she was being undercut in ways that were like super microaggression-y. And as I got to know her better, I actually spent some time with her, and the way she presented in business meetings was a completely different person from when she presented in like a friendly in-person context. Like, this woman loves her nails, loves her hoops, loves her braids. That's who she is. And when she was in her meetings, she was wearing the more like white appearing hair. If she had her nails, she'd like hide them. And then she'd speak, she'd code switch. She'd do everything she could to make sure that people understood that she was there to be a professional. And she was switching jobs, and I was like, look, go in there being you. Like, go in there with the hoops and the braids and the nails. Like, try that. Because they can't undercut you as the angry Black woman if you're already behaving in a way that seems to confirm their stereotype. And now she's a really successful coach and mentor to other people, and I'm really proud of her. And in all her photographs, she is who she is, and I love it.
I love that. I thank you for sharing that piece, because we're afraid to be who we are, but like, what if you were hired? What if you joined the team as you, right? Like, only you can bring the skill set that you have and solve problems and make money and elevate a business if you show up as yourself. Like, pretending every day is exhausting.
Yeah. Now, I will say that this is something that takes a little bit of a track record to be able to do. Like, you may not be hired right off the street if you fall into a bunch of stereotypes, but you don't have any proof to know that you know what you're doing. It can be a challenge. So I do want to acknowledge that that's a bit of a privileged position. But at the same time, I still would do it the way I am. I always find a way in every conversation when I meet people to let them know that I'm gay in a very subtle way. That's one of the ways that I do it. And I've done that since the very beginning. And I realized that that might have lost me a couple jobs in the beginning. And that's okay. I'm okay with that.
Well, and at the end of the day, you know, you still have to be good at the job at which you're applying. Like, you have to be qualified with your abilities, your knowledge, your know-how, or your opportunity for growth to earn any role. Yeah. But imagine applying the skill sets that you have as yourself, not as someone that you think they want you to be.
Yeah, so true.
Okay, where are you traveling to next?
Ah, I love this question. Just one second. Okay, so I love to travel. Actually, and my 40th birthday is coming up in 4 days. So I decided I was going to do something big for my birthday. And I'm actually, my dad and I are going to pack a bag in May, a rollerboard, very opinionated about that one. And we are going to go to the airport and buy a ticket. And then we're going to keep doing that for 2.5 weeks. And we're going to go around the world. And we don't know where we're going to go. But the whole point is to not to go to places that would be just a typical vacation, but to go a little bit more remote and try it out and spend a day or two and then move on. And I'm super excited.
You've created your own amazing race.
Yeah, exactly, right? Choose your own adventure.
I love that. Okay, what is your pump-up song? You're staring at the board at the airport and you're trying to get fired up for your decision. What are you choosing?
It changes a lot. My current one, I was driving to the ski hill a couple of weeks ago to work, and Crazy Train came on. by Ozzy Osbourne. I know this is crazy, but it was a song that actually the band in college used to play, and the arrangement was really interesting. So I loved listening to it. It does pump me up. But I actually got the sheet music recently, and I'm trying to teach myself again how to play the piano. And so I set the bar really high, and I'm attempting to learn Crazy Train.
It's on my running playlist. So we are, listening to the same music. I love it. Okay. And then what is your favorite quote?
Okay. So this one I'm going to like asterisk a little bit because it's a quote that's good for me. For me, I apologize a lot. I take accountability a lot, sometimes to my detriment. And so in college, there was this TV show that was rather new and cutting edge. It was called Queer as Folk. And for me, it was like a touchstone for how I could live a full life as an adult and not be on the shadows, I should say. And there was a character named Brian Kinney who would just say, no apologies, no regrets. I am who I am. And so for me, that fits. I do think there are plenty of people who need to apologize, and I need to apologize on a regular basis. But it's the quote that reminds me to stick by my guns and to stick and be who I am and to not try to change myself.
I love that. And I think that quotes can be looked at through different lenses for different people. And it's beautiful. So it's been so fun to get to know you today. Thank you, Claire, for being a part of the podcast. You have given us so much. I mean, I've got a whole page of notes here, just scribbled down on different amazing insights that you so graciously shared with us today. So thank you for being on Leadership is Female. Where can we follow along with your career?
Awesome. So you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm Claire Milligan. The business is Aimably, AIMABLY, aimably.com. You can find me on social accounts at Claire Designs as well. I'm pretty opinionated on Medium if you want to follow me there.
Well, you have been fantastic. Thank you so much for being a part of the podcast and leading us forward in our lives and careers.
Thanks so much. It's been great getting to know you too.
Thank you so much for spending your time with us today. Time is your most precious resource, and it means the world that you spent it with us. Please help us reach more people who need to hear these interviews by hitting the subscribe button and the 5-star rating on your iPhone. Do you know someone who could benefit from this interview? Please share it. Take a screenshot and post to your Instagram stories, copy the link and share on LinkedIn, or text that link to your colleague. The Leadership is Female podcast exists to showcase female leadership in sports and entertainment and give you the tips to level up. We will extend a hand back to lead you forward. Extend the same hand by sharing this with someone who needs to hear it. One last thing. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Leadership is Female. Now, take this lesson and run. Let's go.